From WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Every successful municipality will inevitably grapple with the push-pull of growth versus green space, how to grow a tax base without overdeveloping a city. Echo Farms, a development within the city of Wilmington, is at the center of this controversy in the Cape Fear region. The Star News estimates about 100 people came out yesterday to a subdivision review board meeting. Most of the crowd was there to oppose the green lighting of Matrix Development's plans to build a mix of multifamily units, townhomes, and new single-family homes on what is now the golf course. Today, we'll learn more about the controversy itself and why opponents say what happens at Echo Farms could have implications that go beyond the geographic boundaries of that neighborhood. Adam Lovelady is an assistant professor at the University of North Carolina School of Government, and he joins us today from the UNC studio. Adam Lovelady, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you very much.
John Herchak has lived in the Echo Farms community for 12 years. He opposes the developer's plans, and he is the current vice chair of Save Echo Farms, the nonprofit organization that sprang up in response to the proposed redevelopment. John Herchak, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
And we are also very glad to have with us today Christine Hughes. She is a senior planner for the city of Wilmington. Christine Hughes, welcome to Coastline.
Glad to be here.
We did reach out to Matrix Development, the current developer. They declined to participate. We are inviting you to join the conversation. Do you live in the Echo Farms area? Do you support the developer's right to manage the land in a way that's profitable? If you oppose it, tell us why. You can reach us on this Thursday at 910-343-1138, or you can email us at coastline@whqr.org. Christine Hughes of the City of Wilmington. For those folks who've sort of tangentially followed this in the papers and on TV and on the radio, they hear about Echo Farms, they know there's a controversy, but they don't really know where it is and how many people this affects. What is Echo Farms?
Echo Farms is a neighborhood just off of Carolina Beach Road. I believe it was built in the early 80s. I'm not sure how many homes are currently in the neighborhood. Perhaps John can weigh in on that. But like so many of our neighborhoods, it was built prior to annexation into the city limits. And so it was not developed under city regulations.
And John Herchak of Save Echo Farms, why did Save Echo Farms spring up in the first place? What is it about the current developer's plans that upset homeowners?
Well, when the land was originally developed, it was developed with the golf course and the communities in mind. There are 11 communities that border the golf course with over 920 housing units. And for them to develop the golf course and take away essentially a core part of the original development impacts every single person that lives out there. And as you had said in the introduction, beyond the whole Echo Farms through the city, the county, and I think southeastern North Carolina.
Adam Lovelady with the UNC School of Government. This is not an isolated occurrence happening here in Wilmington. This is actually something of a trend, isn't it? There's a change in the profitability of golf courses.
There is, yeah. And I'm no expert on the economics of golf courses, but just from the headlines and from just planning trends and development trends around the country, the declining membership in courses, the declining number of golfers going to courses, along with the cost of upkeep and maintenance for golf courses, over the last 10 years, I suppose, probably even longer than that, there has been a trend of golf courses that perhaps had been flourishing, falling on hard times, and then course managers as well as property owners, the owners of the courses, looking for new options for those golf courses. And sometimes that's just turning it over as parkland or open space or perhaps constructed wetlands. Sometimes those are plans for redevelopment of taking what was the old fairway or the old green and turning it into commercial or residential development.
And for those of us who are not golfers, is a golf course a more expensive proposition to keep up and maintain than, say, just green space? Adam Lovelady.
I presume so. I'm no expert on the economics of golf, but just the regular upkeep of mowing very frequently, of the high level of turf maintenance required for a golf course, as well as the staff to go along with the instruction and maintaining golf carts, clubhouse, all of the kind of ancillary pieces. It's an expensive proposition, and especially as compared to just letting something go wild or having general open space that may have some maintained areas, but it's not to the level of a golf course. Keeping it up as a golf course is a much more expensive proposition.
John Hertak of Save Echo Farms, shouldn't this be a pretty open and shut, clearly defined sort of proposition? In other words, are there restrictive covenants that say this is what this land is for, and as long as this neighborhood is around, this is what it will be? I mean, is that – do you have, as a homeowner within Echo Farms, any kind of protective covenants that determine that?
There were many attached documents with the original proposal that have been recorded that are attached to the deed, and that's part of the lawsuit that's being pursued by one of the homeowners associations in there, the Echo Farms Residents Association. It's something that we support, and it seems pretty clear looking at our documentation that that is specifically addressed, that the land was developed as a course. There are membership rights and there are ownership rights, and they tie together.
Tell us about you said homeowners associations. There are multiple associations within Echo Farms.
That is correct, because there are 11 distinct neighborhoods in there. We're dealing with almost 1,000 people, and so Save Echo Farms was formulated originally so that we would represent each of those 11 neighborhoods, so that everyone had a say in the process and in what is ultimately will be the final result.
Adam Lovelady, are there circumstances under which restrictive covenants might say something about how a piece of land can be used, but those covenants can be overruled or invalidated? Under what circumstances could that happen?
Sure. So restrictive covenants are essentially private property agreements that are set up at the time that property is transferred. And they outline certain rights and responsibilities between the owners of those adjoining properties or those related properties. And these are fairly familiar documents for folks who live in a more recent subdivision. Oftentimes, these restrictive covenants will give rights and responsibilities for maintaining streets if they're private streets, taking care of a community playground or tennis court or swimming pool. It requires that property owners pay dues into the homeowners association, and also it can regulate things like the design of a home. Maybe you have to go get approval if you want to paint your home a different color, that sort of thing. And these certainly can play into golf course communities and assign certain rights and responsibilities around golf course property, golf course membership, and the kind of the functioning of the golf course. Each of these restrictive covenants, they are unique, and so it depends on how those documents were set up from the start, and it depends on what the rights and responsibilities are in those documents. They are property. They control the property and run with the land, so they are part of the recorded property documents. They can be adjusted over time, but typically that's going to require agreement among the property owners to say this was the way things were set up, but situations have changed, our outlook has changed, or the relationship between these properties has changed, and so it's time to change these agreements. But it is fact specific. It depends on the documents of that particular neighborhood or those particular properties.
John Hertak of Save Echo Farms, are there any homeowners who support Matrix's plans for redevelopment in this case, who could help to change some of those restrictive covenants? I mean, is that part of the equation here?
I'm sure it's a possibility, but I think overall the community is set against this. The people in these 11 communities bought into the golf course concept. Certainly the people who bought on the golf course bought into this. We also have Bernard's Creek, which borders in between the golf course and the creek. We have housing. And so Bernard's Creek is directly impacted by this too. And the people who live on the creek are extremely concerned, since Bernard's Creek is already at 22% impervious surface, which is a staggering amount. 5% impervious surface is considered a healthy environment for a watershed. We're at 22%. With the building that's been approved, we're approaching 25%. And 25%, unfortunately, is the tipping point between being able to save a watershed and watching it wither away.
And for those folks who aren't conversant in the lingo, impervious surface and the ratio of impervious surface in a given area, what does that mean for a watershed?
So impervious surfaces would be housing, driveways, roads, sidewalks, any surface area that cannot absorb water. And so you take it from an aerial view and you determine how many acres you have in watershed, and then you look at how much of it is built out, and you can determine this is something that are in all the plans too.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. Should a developer have the right to redevelop parts of a neighborhood or remove amenities if they're no longer profitable? We're exploring that question, and we're taking a closer look at the future of Echo Farms within the city of Wilmington. We're also taking your questions and comments on this Thursday. The phone lines are now open. You can call us at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. When we come back, we'll hear from property owner Robert Welch. You're listening to Coastline. Listening to Coastline, I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. We're talking today about what property owners can reasonably expect when they buy within a subdivision that has restrictive covenants as part of the homeowners association, and whether redevelopment plans such as the ones on the docket for Echo Farms are always going to be a potential outcome. With us today, Assistant Professor Adam Lovelady at the UNC School of Government, Christine Hughes, Senior Planner with the City of Wilmington, and John Herchak, Vice Chair of Save Echo Farms, a nonprofit that opposes the redevelopment of Echo Farms. And we're taking your questions and comments on this Thursday. You can reach us at 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. And I promised we were going to hear from a homeowner in Echo Farms, but before we do that, Adam Lovelady at UNC School of Government, can you speak to what a prospective property owner might look for if, say, they're relocating, they want to buy in a neighborhood that has amenities like a golf course, and they want to know that those amenities are going to be there for the next 20 years. Is there any way a property owner can be assured of that?
Sure. Well, it's every property is unique and every market is unique. And some of what we do when we purchase property is we bank on and we hope for the best for our neighborhood, the best for our property. But there are ways of assuring that certain things are going to be a certain way. Some of those are through private property agreements, and some of those are through public regulations. And so private restrictive covenants that run with the land and govern the way that property might be used, that's one way that assures that I on my property are going to have certain rights but also certain obligations, and my neighbors have certain rights and certain obligations, and that can restrict the uses of the land, perhaps saying it can only be used for single-family homes. It can oversee and make sure that certain amenities are going to be taken care of. So if I'm in a neighborhood that has private streets or a private club, I might be required to pay in dues to the association to make sure that those streets are maintained, to make sure that clubhouse is taken care of and the pool is taken care of. That might also relate to something like a golf course. It just depends on how those restrictive covenants and associations are structured. And then, I can talk later about the public side of things, the zoning and subdivision regulations, but we can jump into that later.
Okay, sure. And we need to get to that this segment because we just have you for this second segment. But briefly, I realize there are so many variables here. But if property owners in, say, Echo Farms were required to be a member of the golf club or were required somehow to pay dues, do you think it would be harder for the developer to move forward with redevelopment plans?
It's hard for me to say for this particular situation. I don't know this property or this development or the documents of this development, and it really does depend on each of those unique circumstances. It certainly is the case that if there is a requirement for membership and a requirement for dues, that probably helps a golf course to maintain its membership and maintain its dues. But it doesn't change the basic underlying economic facts of maintaining a golf course and the costs that go along with that. There also would be separate questions of, is that an incentive for home buyers for that neighborhood, or is it a disincentive? Because if I'm moving into the neighborhood, perhaps I'd like to look out at the golf course and have that open space, but I'm not a golfer. I don't want to be required to pay dues for something I'm not going to be using. And so there would be a balance there of the incentive and disincentive for prospective homebuyers.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about the potential redevelopment of the Echo Farms golf course, the golf course being replaced with a mix of townhomes, single-family homes, and multifamily homes. We have a letter from, he says, my name is Robert Welch. My wife and I bought our current home in 2005, believing Wilmington to be an excellent place for our retirement. One of our dearest wishes when hunting for our retirement home was to live on a golf course. Nothing we heard or were told then or since has given us any hint that this golf course would not survive us. We have lived adjacent to Echo Farms Golf Club for 11 years, and in those 11 years, we've made extensive modifications to our home in anticipation of spending our retirement years here. As is true of many retired couples, our home is our largest asset and one which we will likely need to turn into cash for living expenses in our final years. I'm sure you're aware that just the news about the Matrix Group's plans has been enough to lower home sales prices in our neighborhood. Now we're threatened with this proposed project of 200 and some starter homes stuffed onto tiny lots all over the golf course, including, of course, right across our back fence. As designed, this development will turn our open, mature, and quiet neighborhood of predominantly retired or nearly retired families into a noisy, overstuffed sausage of cheap homes on tiny lots crammed in between established, well-maintained, and spacious properties. Beyond those facts, we deeply resent Matrix's current intentions to erase our well-earned and comfortable way of life and look to our elected officials to recognize our value as a mature neighborhood, our financial support of the city, and our wish to preserve a stable neighborhood by voting to limit the development to homes similar to those now existing. Recognizing the right of the Matrix Group to make the best use of its property, we concede Matrix has a right to turn this golf course into homes, but we will not concede that they have the right to destroy the character of our neighborhood by their decisions. John Hurtak.
I think that's a wonderful point, and I think that's a sentiment of many people who live in the 11 communities of Echo Farms. A lot of people did buy there that are not golfers. They bought into the concept. They may not be golfers, but they bought a golf course front property. If you go through Echo Farms proper, the original development, you'll find that no two homes are alike. You don't see that in neighborhoods anymore. You'll see the mature trees. You'll see the fondness people have for the neighborhood with people walking around the loop. But what you'll also see is that people have made a concerted effort to make the back of their home the selling feature. So normally people will front load their property, right? They'll do the bulk of their landscaping and their design work for the front. That's what they're trying to highlight. And Echo Farms is different. Because the neighborhood and communities were built around the golf course, all of the extensions, the decking, the landscaping, the beautification was done on the back of the property. So when you take away the golf course, you take away the value of the property. And that's not arbitrary. We've seen this happen in Palm Springs. We've seen it happen throughout Arizona. And everywhere that this happens, where they build on a golf course in an existing community, the existing homeowners suffer a loss of 10 to 30% in value. And it may be great that Matrix is going to make tens of millions of dollars on this, but they're going to do it on the backs of the homeowners who are there now, who are going to suffer a loss in equity of tens of millions of dollars. It's not an advantage to the city. It's not an even swap. There's going to be a loss on one end, a gain on the other, loss in tax revenue because of declining appraised values on one end and additional revenue on the other with additional expenses for maintenance.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about the proposed redevelopment of the Echo Farms neighborhood in Wilmington. We have Christine Hughes, senior planner with the City of Wilmington here today, Adam Lovelady, assistant professor at UNC School of Government, and John Herchak, vice chair of Save Echo Farms, who opposes the current redevelopment plans. You can ask your own question or make a comment on this Thursday by calling us at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. Raymond of Echo Farms, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. Appreciate all the guests you've assembled. So, full disclosure, I'm a neighbor of John's. I happen to live essentially across the street from him. My house is on the 15th fairway. My neighborhood may not, or my backyard might not be quite as beautiful as John has said, although I do echo what he says. No pun intended, Echo Farms. Our backyards are designed such that when you're standing in the backyard, you can see the golf course. And, you know, unfortunately, I've chosen since this came up in August not to trim my bushes because, you know, this neighborhood that they're going to build is not going to look like the neighborhood that we currently live in. You know, I live in a 3,000-square-foot all-brick house. And they're not going to build those kind of houses, which leads me to what I really wanted to talk about, which is zoning. And just wanted to clarify what I think Christine said. So the Echo Farms was developed in the early mid 1970s, simultaneous with the annexation to the city, and it was zoned residential 15. That was the original zoning. The houses on the back nine are fairly large, executive style. Certainly back in the 70s, it would have been houses. And you had to get a special use permit to build something other than a standard single-family home. So the only townhouses that were built in the early 80s, Echo Greens, Wimbledon Court, and those were authorized by special use permit. Then in 1984, and Christine will know this, March 27th, 1984, as part of another annexation not directly related to Echo Farms, the city adopted its current zoning maps, and they just essentially changed the zoning of Echo Farms, the entire subdivision, to multifamily medium density. There doesn't appear to be any documentation associated with it. It just changed. So all the people that owned houses there in 1984 had their zoning changed. People who lived in single-family homes like I do had their zoning changed. Now, I wasn't there at the time. I was serving the United States Navy under Ronald Reagan. But as a result of that, the homeowners in Echo Farms and Appleton Way who lived in single-family homes petitioned the city in 1991 to change the Appleton Way section back to R15, and that was approved. Now, the golf course remained multifamily medium density. Now, of course, the logic was, well, no one's ever going to develop the golf course. That would be insane. And, of course, the reason for that is the front nine was undeveloped. So the owner at the time who owned the land wanted to develop the land into housing. Not Matrix, because Matrix owned the golf course. He had two separate owners. And, of course, there wouldn't have been any development had there not been a golf course.
Okay, well, let's let Christine Hughes. Does this history sound accurate to you?
Nor was I there in 1984.
Right.
I can't speak too specifically about the history of the zoning and the annexation and Echo Farms, but I can say at a more general level, the city had a history of annexation and carrying over as a best match that we could to the existing county zoning at the time. I don't know if that was necessarily the case in terms of what happened in Echo Farms, but that is what we have historically very generally tried to do, was match the existing zoning on the ground at the county level.
Raymond, thank you so much for that call. Adam Lovelady at UNC School of Government, can you weigh in on Raymond's point here and the role that zoning actually plays in a situation like this?
Sure. So zoning is the local regulations, the local ordinance that governs land use and development. And it divides the jurisdiction up into different districts and then assigns particular land uses for those districts and has development regulations, heights of buildings, setbacks from the road, parking standards, those sorts of standards for new development there. And one of the things that zoning can do is protect the character of an area. So if an area is currently single family, if it's zoned for additional single family, then that keeps the new development in line with the current character. What oftentimes happens is you get these kinds of conflicts where there may be one property owner is seeking a rezoning or has a rezoning, allowing for a more intense or more dense development than what's nearby, and the folks that are nearby, the neighbors, would like to maintain things the way that they are, and so zoning disputes oftentimes play out in this way, and it is oftentimes contentious and difficult challenge. Zoning is one of the public regulations that helps to regulate development, but it's also, as the caller noted through the history, zoning is not etched in stone. So a new city council is voted in, and that city council can change the zoning for different areas or change the rules that go with the zoning. It's a legislative decision for the politicians to make, and so zoning provides a level of protection for existing neighborhoods, but it's not etched in stone. It can be changed over time.
John Hertak of Save Echo Farms, the zoning piece of it is something that your group is pursuing. Can you talk about that?
That also is being done by an individual homeowners association, not Save Echo Farms, but we are also very supportive of that. We do have the right to file a petition for rezoning. There is precedence for that, and in fact, locally here, we are, acting as citizens and making our request. The interesting thing about the zoning, though, and what's most disturbing is, as Ray pointed out, when this rezoning took place, they took the existing homes that were in there, 90-plus homes that are on one-third to one-half acre. And these homeowners woke up one day. I'd like to say they woke up one day and discovered this. They didn't. It was years down the road. But when the annexation took place, their homes were suddenly zoned multifamily medium. To me, that's just one very important indication that the wrong zoning was applied. You can't zone a residential neighborhood that's established that already exists on one-third plus acre lots suddenly to multifamily medium. That was never the intended use of this development, never the intended use of these homes. And there's no other golf course. It's very difficult in North Carolina to find another golf course that's zoned multifamily medium. Certainly there's none in Wilmington. It's a very unusual zoning for the for a golf course to be.
Adam Lovelady, what are the chances that – well, actually, maybe you should just speak to the pressures facing an entity like the city of Wilmington in this case What's the push-pull for the city of Wilmington here?
Sure. Well, I don't know this specific case, but I can, from seeing similar disputes around the state and around the country, I can speak to some of the way that these politics and policies play out. On the one hand, Wilmington and the Wilmington region is a growing region, and there are rising home costs. There are more people moving to the region, and a need for new growth and new housing. On the other hand, there are a lot of existing homeowners and neighborhoods that like the way things are and like their communities as they are. For the city, balancing those the need for new growth and the need to preserve the character of the neighborhood is always a difficult balance. And then layered on that is the questions about the public services and the public infrastructure. Is there sufficient water and sewer to support new development? Are the roads already crowded with traffic, and adding new multifamily or townhomes or single-family homes, what will that do to the traffic for the area? What does it mean for the schools, for the first responders, for the whole range of services and infrastructure that the city provides? What does this new project mean for that? And these big policy questions that affect the whole city, they affect the whole region, play out in very specific and direct ways through these zoning disputes, where you have the push and pull between community character and growth, between the cost of new development and the benefits of new development.
Very well said, and you set us up perfectly for the third segment, Adam Lovelady. We're going to talk about some of the development that is currently going on in that area and what people with Save Echo Farms are concerned about when it comes to traffic and the load on schools and infrastructure. You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about the Echo Farms potential redevelopment, what it means for property owners, the city of Wilmington's future. We have to say goodbye to Adam Lovelady of UNC School of Government. Professor Lovelady, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
When we come back from this 90-second break, you'll have one more segment to call in with your comment or a question on this Thursday, 910-343-1138 or coastline@whqr.org. You're listening to Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Today, we're exploring land use in Wilmington and what it means to be part of a homeowners association or buy property with the assumption that certain developer-provided amenities will be there in the future. We're talking about Echo Farms redevelopment, that proposed redevelopment. With us to answer your questions on this Thursday, Christine Hughes, senior planner with the City of Wilmington, and John Herchak, vice chair of Save Echo Farms. That group is opposed to the redevelopment proposal. You have a few minutes left to give us a call, 910-343-1138, or email us today at coastline@whqr.org. And we have a few calls on the line that we'll get to in a moment. But first, John Herchak, your group is concerned about the increased load, not just from this proposal. Is that correct? Tell us specifically what you're concerned about.
Well, we have several. Traffic, first off, the NCDOT out of 83 cities ranks Wilmington as second worst in traffic crashes. According to the Urban Mobility Scorecard, Wilmington drivers already suffer 20 hours of traffic delay and waste $435 in fuel annually. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration has determined in a study between 2011 and 2015 that Carolina Beach Road is the deadliest road in New Hanover County. That road in front of Echo Farms is already above 100% capacity. Independence Boulevard, which borders the western side of Echo Farms, is already at 108% capacity. This does not include the 2,500 units at River Lights, nor the state's largest Harris Teeter that's to be built, nor the thousands of new apartments that have already been approved within 3 miles of Echo Farms.
Christine Hughes, senior planner with the City of Wilmington. Tell us the official word on what is happening in this neighborhood. What kinds of things are we seeing going up when we drive by on Carolina Beach Road and 17th Street?
Sure. Well, Wilmington, it's important to remember that within the city limits, we're about 90% built out. So right now, any new development that goes on it really is in someone's backyard, quite literally. So it does make it feel sometimes a little confusing or a little off-putting when things are close. But you may have heard the expression, the best way to save the countryside is to build a better city. And that's, you know, from the big picture perspective, that's our goal with our comprehensive plan and with reviewing all development and traffic, infrastructure, anything like that. So we are an urbanized area, and we do have some challenges. Citywide, we're looking at about 4,000 new housing units in the pipeline. About 2,500 of those are multifamily units. So it's a little less than 50-50 mix there. We have several big developments that are underway. River Lights off of River Road was a recent annexation in development. The Point at Barclay is under construction. There are several smaller projects underway.
And so when we lump all those projects together, about how many more people does that add to the population?
Well,
this is an estimate.
Sure.
I understand.
We're expecting our 2025 population projection is 140,000, and we are around 116,000 right now. So it's really important to understand that Wilmington is a growing area. Our three-county region is expected to grow by almost 700,000 people over the next 20 years. That's a lot of people. So to accommodate growth in a responsible and sustainable way, we really have to think about redevelopment. We have to think about where density is appropriate. We have to think about a mix of housing types and price points so that we're not building a community that's exclusive and excluding entire groups of people. And we do need to think about our infrastructure. On the one hand, building where we've already invested so much money in existing infrastructure makes a lot of sense. We can usually accommodate a little bit more density in those areas because the infrastructure is already in place. We also need to think about putting services close to residential uses so that short trips are possible, so that walking and biking trips are possible, not just for recreation, but for actual transportation options. And we have to think about connecting our land use and our transportation patterns so that we are building in a way that makes mass transit a feasible option, a desirable option for people to use instead of getting in a single occupancy vehicle every time you need to go somewhere.
So does the comprehensive plan then not specify what, say, Echo Farms is, what it should be? Is that not something that's in black and white right now?
Zoning is never black and white. Mm-hmm. The comprehensive plan does not specify future land uses for Echo Farms or for any other part of our city. We cities have historically used a future land use map, and we have found that as soon as you publish it, it's wrong, it's out of date. So we moved away from that with our comprehensive plan and really focused more on building a better city overall. Sometimes a specific land use isn't as critical as the overall development pattern or the integration of uses. So we've moved away from that.
We have an email. Robert asks, if you do not want it developed, why doesn't your group just buy it and run it? John Herchak.
We have met with Matrix. We have we are in discussions with them now on ways that we can preserve the land. They have in the past tried to sell the property. As a member, I can say for 15 years I have every year when they seek member input, I have suggested they make certain improvements to the course. There are certain things they can do to drive up membership, to drive up daily play, which is important to their bottom line. I can't address, in my opinion, if the course isn't being managed properly, I don't see where that burden suddenly falls on the homeowners, right? We've done our part. I've done my part. I've been a member of the club. I've tried to support it. But overall, it doesn't change the fact that they're taking advantage of the multifamily medium zoning, which is a transitional zoning from low density to high density, and they're using it to transition from low density to low density, which is not the right zoning.
And we have Scott from Wilmington. Welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Good afternoon. I just wanted to call in and first thank you for this topic, this forum, to allow us to speak from our hearts about what's going on at Echo Farms.
Do you live there, Scott?
I do. Yes, ma'am. We bought in July We're from Charlotte, and we bought the historic home on Appleton Way, almost 100 years old, and with a focus on restoring that to its original glory. And in fact, the impact on just that historic home is that the golf course borders three of the four properties. And the golf course was actually built around this historic home, first built by the McCarleys in 1917. And for your listeners that don't know the history of Echo Farms, I would greatly encourage those to read this wonderful, rich history we have in Wilmington. And as I heard previously, a lot of the attention is on the beautiful backyards that we have, but the Echo Farms historic house faces the golf course. And in fact, the 18th tee box is on the property.
And so, Scott, you said you just bought your home last summer, so you haven't been there for a year yet. Is that right?
We have not. And again, the disappointing thing, we bought specifically for several reasons. We bought for the golf course, obviously, but we bought because of the wonderful character of the neighborhood. And we found out in August that Matrix was developing the course, and of course, just heartbroken to hear
so
the news.
So if this moves forward, if this proposed redevelopment moves forward and multifamily units and townhomes and other single-family homes go up on what is now the golf course, will you stay in your home, Scott?
Yes, ma'am, we will. Again, our hearts were to restore this great home, truly trying to preserve the past for future generations and tell in detail the history of Echo Farms. In fact, Salt Magazine is doing an article, I think, in March, the story of the rescue of the house, and I very much would like the Save Echo Farms to have a rescue theme to it as well. But yes, we're staying committed, but deeply heartbroken that it looks as though this could possibly move forward. But again, just the historic component to Echo Farms, I want to make sure your listeners know that it is more than a golf course. It truly is.
And you know, the
place.
Yes, and the Star News actually did a wonderful history of Echo Farms, and I think we'll link to that on our website when we put the audio recording of this show up. Thank you so much for your call, Scott. Really appreciate that. And we have Michael from Wilmington. Welcome to Coastline. You're on the air. Are you still there, Michael? He is not. We've lost Michael. You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about the proposed redevelopment of the Echo Farms neighborhood within the city of Wilmington. You have a few minutes left to give us a call at 910-343-1138 on this Thursday. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. Christine Hughes, we recognize you're not the decider. You're the senior planner. But when people get together who make the decision on this sorts of things, let's take whether the zoning is kept in place or whether that changes, do they consider comments like Scott's? You know, Scott purchased this historic home that he was looking forward to refurbishing and preserving, and a month or two later found out that he was going to have apartment homes behind his house instead of a golf course. What do you say to someone like that?
Again, not specific to Echo Farms, but on the bigger picture level, sometimes we lose sight of the fact, and he said this very well, that we are the change, right? That he's purchased a home that was once a farmhouse, right? So at some point in time, Echo Farms was in fact a farm, and now it's a neighborhood. So at some point, somebody was opposed to John's own home being developed. So it's very easy to lose sight of we are the change. I live in a neighborhood where there is a very large vacant tract behind my home, fully aware that at some point a development proposal will probably come in for that site. So it's not, again, fair for me to lose sight of the idea that I am the change. So that's an important thing, especially in Wilmington where we are built out. In terms of the zoning process or rezoning process, yes, there is absolutely opportunity for public comment. Public hearing, usually the standard format is that a recommendation is brought forward from the staff to the Planning Commission, and there's an opportunity for public comment in that format. The Planning Commission will also issue a recommendation that gets forwarded to the City Council, and when there is a hearing in front of the City Council, there's again an opportunity for public comment in front of the City Council.
John Hertek of Save Echo Farms, there are a number of avenues that your group is pursuing. You've also talked about a win-win-win in this case. What would that look like to you? How would you like to see this go?
Well, I mean, obviously, our, you know, first and foremost, we want to save the golf course. Again, we have reached out to Matrix. We have reached out to Community Environmental and Defense Services up in Maryland. We have hired them. They have been in contact with various golf course management groups across the country on how to make Echo Farms more profitable. There are concrete solutions to do this. The bottom line, though, is we want to save that green space. This acreage is second only to Greenfield Lake in Wilmington. And to lose this at this point, honestly, and as Christine said, we're over 90% built out. In 5 years, there's going to be the same argument with another community, and the argument isn't going to be to save the 139 acres of Echo Farms. It's going to be, hey, how do we save the last acre in Wilmington? We cannot regain the land. We cannot recreate park space out of nothing. It has to come from somewhere. And I think to save this land now is critical. Once it's gone, it's over. There are no large parcels left that haven't either already been approved for development or are being developed. So if we don't save this land now, the people of Wilmington are going to continue to live with half the park space that the National Parks and Rec Service deems the minimum, which is 10 acres per 1,000 people. We have 5 acres per 1,000 people. And that's where I think an adequate public facilities ordinance would be invaluable, something that can protect the homeowners, that can hold the city officials' feet to the fire.
And we got Michael from Wilmington back. Quickly, Michael, we have about a minute.
Okay, I'll make this short and sweet. Thank you for having me on. But I had to enforce restrictive covenants. I had restrictions in a deed in one of the subdivisions I had developed in Onslow County. We had not done everything exactly right as far as meetings, minutes. We had stayed current as a corporation, but as developers, we had to enforce our own restrictive covenants. And we were able to do so, but only after we went to Superior Court, which we went all the way to a jury trial, and 12 of our peers listened to the story and came back with exactly the right verdict. Although Ben Alford, who was on the bench at the time, in pretrial hearings, made it very clear to us that he would move heaven and earth before he would enforce these restrictive covenants. That's why we asked for a jury trial. And so I encourage John to look at WeTalk Development Corporation, D. Tallman. It occurred in Onslow County, which is Jacksonville, North Carolina, and to take a look at the adjudication as arrived at by a jury. And I encourage you, if your restrictive covenants are right, to get thee to a jury trial. We used a great attorney, Robert
okay.
Detweiler.
I'm sorry, Michael. I'm going to have to jump in here. We just have a few seconds left. Thank you so much for calling back. Christine Hughes, next step.
For Echo Farms, there will be a rezoning process, I believe.
All right. And we are going to put all of that information on our website. And John Hertek, you have an event coming up.
Public forum, January 24th at Roland Grace Middle School at 6:30 p.m.
And we will also put that on the website for folks who want details on that. That's this edition of Coastline. Christine Hughes, John Hertek, thank you both so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Coastline's executive producer is Cleve Callison. Producer is Isabel Shepherd. Technical director is Ken Campbell. Caleb Covington engineered today's show. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at whqr.org or get the podcast from iTunes. Tune in for the rebroadcast of this episode Sunday afternoon at 2. And join us for Coastline next week when we explore universal design and the growing field of special education. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.